I wonder if you've seen on Channel 4 that new series of Brat Camp. The idea is that a group of really wild and difficult teenagers are sent off to a tough so-called Brat Camp in the United States. Each one has a background of being totally out of control. Most of them are on drugs and have had constant brushes with the law as a result. I gather it's on the third series now. We've been away for the last few years, but we saw the third series start this week. And this time there are seven girls from Britain who are being forced to live it rough in the mountain wilderness of Utah. None of them wants to be there. And yet they soon realize that if they don't comply with the many rules imposed on them by the leaders, they're going to stay longer. And their experience will grow worse. If they obey, eventually they'll get out. One girl actually said that she'd got her own way all her life and didn't see why she had to stop now. She soon learned. But for all their rebelliousness and the camp leader's toughness, well, the program recognizes that these are all troubled people, troubled children. And many of them were coming to recognize themselves that they really did actually miss their homes, including one or two of those who'd, well, one girl had run away from home 50 or 60 times. And they weren't missing their homes just because of warm beds and hot showers, but also because of their parents, whom they actually did love. But what was more heartbreaking watching this was seeing the parents back in the UK. It's every parent's nightmare and dread. And each one of these parents is completely exasperated. They simply have no idea what to do to reach out to their children and, well, hopefully to reestablish something more like a sort of preteen harmonious relationship. No one said parenting was easy. No one said that being a teenager was straightforward. Everybody expects things to be tough, but not that tough. It shouldn't be like this. And so the seven girls' parents saw no alternative but to send them off into the wilderness brat camp for as long as it took. But they weren't alone. Apparently the program had thousands of applications for those seven places on the series. I don't know whether any came from here, but it's probably best not to know. Parenting is hard. We all need help in this area. Rachel and I often scratch our heads and think, well, how do we deal with this situation? And our kids are small. That's why it is something we're seriously going to be looking at, seriously examining how we can support parents at All Souls, particularly with sort of courses and other forms of support. But that's not the main reason for bringing this all up here. You see, in fact, it is strikingly appropriate for what Paul is facing in this section of 2 Corinthians. Just as those brat camp parents were agonizing over their children's behavior, so is Paul with these Corinthian Christians. Because being a church planter, let alone involved in Christian ministry generally, has its rather uncomfortable parallels with being a parent. In another one of his letters, 1 Thessalonians, which our fellowship groups here at All Souls are studying at the moment, in that letter, Paul actually likens himself and likens his work amongst the Thessalonians to being that of a mother and a father. He uses both terms to describe what he's doing. And here in 2 Corinthians, he sees it in terms of being a parent in general. Now, he's not quite got to the point of wanting to send the Corinthians off to the Utah wilderness, but if it had been an option to him in the first century, I'm sure the thought would have crossed his mind. Because what is all the more frustrating about these guys is that they weren't teenagers at all. They were fully grown adults who should have been mature enough to see how they were behaving. But they don't get it. Now, that should be some relief to the teenagers present here. So that you don't always feel that you're the ones getting the blame, you can be sure that adults actually can behave far, far worse. Someone once quipped, "Children are unpredictable. You never know what inconsistency they're going to catch you out on next." Throughout the last couple of chapters of 2 Corinthians that we've looked at before and after Christmas, Paul has had to go through an extensive account of his ministry to prove himself, to defend himself against the so-called super apostles. And he's had an unusual CV, to say the least, as those of us who were around last week will have heard. But he's been reluctant, and one can almost hear him do it through gritted teeth. And the similarities to a parent's role actually help us to understand his frustrations. The first is this: a parent shouldn't need to boast. A parent shouldn't need to boast. Look at verse 11. "I've made a fool of myself, but you drove me to it. I ought to have been commended by you, for I am not in the least inferior to the super apostles, even though I'm nothing. The things that mark an apostle, signs, wonders, and miracles, they were done among you with great perseverance." Paul had been the one to plant the church. He'd been the one to teach them the Christian message right from the start. He'd laid the foundations. And it was exasperating to see new kids on the block undermining all the work that he'd done. The super apostles were a bit like the new gang in the school playground who steal the dinner money parents provide daily. They've muscled in. They're the ones encouraging rebelliousness. But then, of course, parents can be terribly embarrassing sometimes, can't they? I mean, when your dad goes and gets a haircut, it's hard not to take it as a personal slight, isn't it? Or when your mum buys that ghastly new handbag, it's hard not to think that you can't be seen dead outside the house with her. Parents can be frightfully embarrassing. But as far as these Corinthians were concerned, Paul was beyond the pale. He was weak. He was a lousy speaker. He had all kinds of emotional and physical problems, all kinds of hang-ups. And as we saw last week, he had this rather embarrassing little problem of being an ex-con who'd spent his ministry in and out of jail. How embarrassing is that? Now, these super apostles didn't have any problems like that. They were much better parents. How many kids have seen photos of some sort of A-list celebrities in the paper? Seen these celebrities out with their young children doing something really fun, like going to Disneyland or a Leicester Square premiere. You know, you've all seen those photos. How many kids haven't looked at those and thought, I wish they were my parents? Much more exciting, much more impressive. Instead, all I've got are my mum and dad. Boring. All the Corinthians had was boring old Paul. They wanted someone to be proud of. Such thoughts must have been agony for Paul, as they would be for any parent, don't you think? The facts should have spoken for themselves. Who was the one who first changed their spiritual nappies? Who was the one who gave them their start in life and taught them everything he knew? It was Paul. He hated having to remind them of all this, but for the sake of their spiritual health, he had to defend what he'd done. He had to make it clear that he was the authentic one and that these other guys were not. He was the real thing. And his authenticity was proved by the suffering he was prepared to endure for their sake. I mean, good parents will give up a lot for their children, won't they? Children should at least acknowledge that. Parents shouldn't have to boast about what they've done for them, but Paul was driven to it. He's not doing it because he's proud or arrogant. He's saying in verse 11, he's really nothing. Now, that's not being self-effacing. It's simply making the point that he himself is not the point. It's Jesus. He's not the center of attention, which is why he feels such a fool having to go into all this detail in chapters 10 and 11. I mean, things have got pretty bad in a family, haven't they? When a parent feels the need to list all the things that qualify them as legitimate parents, things have got pretty bad. As he says in verse 11, I ought to have been commended by you. What more do they want from him? God had done all the signs and wonders to confirm he's the real thing. He's a true apostle. He was sent by Jesus. And like all true apostles sent by Jesus, he consistently served them with great perseverance. He kept at it, despite their hostility. Jim went to a really posh London sixth form college, and one day he was chatting to Fred, a school friend. "I'm really worried," he said. "Dad slaves away at his job so that I'll never need anything and so that I can go to college. Mum spends every day cooking, washing, ironing, cleaning up after me, and she even takes care of me when I'm ill." Fred looked puzzled. "Sounds great to me. Why on earth are you worried?" To which Jim replied, "Well, I'm afraid that they might both try to escape." After all he went through, we could forgive Paul for wanting to escape, don't you think? It would have been easy for Paul to have felt utterly abused and rejected. He might well have washed his hands of them with relief. But what parent wants to do that? After all, those parents who sent their kids to brat camp did so not because they wanted to get rid of their children, but precisely the opposite. They wanted to get them back. So Paul persevered with the Corinthians despite his disappointments and many frustrations with them. And the frustrations were great, as we'll see in the next section. So firstly, a parent shouldn't need to boast. Secondly, a parent doesn't expect to be paid. Now, this is really weird, verses 13 to 18. Really weird. But it just shows how far removed from reality these Corinthians had come. If they could honestly think that this was going on. Situation is this. It all revolves around Paul's determination not to be a burden to the Corinthian church. You notice that word burden come up several times in the passage? Verse 13, he maintains that he was never a burden. When he returns to them, verse 14, he says that he will not be a burden. And he repeats again in verse 16, I have not been a burden to you. It's interesting that there are again parallels with Paul's first letter to the Thessalonians, as we mentioned earlier. He describes himself as father and mother there, but also he describes himself as someone who was not a burden to them. In other words, he had worked hard to earn his keep by making tents or whatever he did, so that as he was preaching and planting the new church in Thessalonica, trying to squeeze money out of his new disciples was the last thing he wanted to do. Sure, there were charlatans and traveling gurus around at the time who did precisely that at their speaker meetings. That's why they did it, to make money. And a lot of them made a lot of money. And tragically, there are still people these days who are doing it for the money. But never Paul. That is why I think it is important we should never have collections at missions, or at least if in a sort of guest event or something like that and there is a collection, it should be explicit that there is never an expectation for a visitor to give. The Thessalonians apparently seems to have appreciated Paul's concern not to impose himself or to put his house out. Well, of course, I mean, it's a very generous thing to do, isn't it? Of course you'd appreciate that. Not the Corinthians. They were so wrapped up in themselves with pride and conceit that they actually felt, well, believe it or not, they actually felt affronted and insulted. Look at verse 13. Paul has to ask them, how are you inferior to the other churches, except that I was never a burden to you? You see, somehow, they thought that if Paul didn't want their money, then he can't think much of them. The super apostles, by contrast, presumably were quite happy to take their money. Somehow that felt right to the Corinthians, that felt normal. But money was the last thing Paul wanted. Can you sense his exasperation with these folks? It's as if, well, it's a bit like, I guess, a teenager attacking her parents for not accepting any rent. I mean, you can just imagine the rant at the kitchen table, can't you? Mum, why do you keep giving me these things for free? Don't you know how that makes me feel? Can't you see that it makes me feel like a charity case? You never let me grow up. I'm not a kid anymore. Just let me pay my rent. I think not. No child really talks like that, as one joker quipped. If you want to recapture your youth, just cut off his allowance. Absurd though that is, that's exactly the sort of thing that was going on in the Corinthians' minds. Paul has to say in verse 14, look, I don't want your possessions, but you. I want you. After all, children should not have to save up for their parents, but parents for their children. Now, that's a rule of thumb for bringing up a family, of course. It's not necessarily denying that when our parents are old, we might need to support them. Don't yank that verse out of context. Just get the simple point that he's making, which he goes on in the next verse. I will very gladly spend for you everything I have and expend myself as well. That's the language of a loving parent, isn't it? And then he's very poignant. If I love you more, will you love me less? What more does he have to do for them? But it's so often the way, isn't it? The more you try to love someone who doesn't want to be loved, the more it gets slapped back in your face. You can sense Paul's pastor's heart here, can't you? You see, he's not the cold, calculating, theological bulldozer that some people take him for. Far from it. He's passionately, emotionally involved and committed to these people, like any good parent. The twist in this section is that the Corinthians then had the audacity to turn around and say, without any logic whatsoever, well, even if you think our money isn't good enough for you, you still get your minions to con it out of us. What? They seem to think that he's a hypocritical trickster who won't let his own hands be contaminated by the filthy lucre, but is quite happy for his team to do so. Just look at verse 17. It's absurd, isn't it? Did I exploit you through any of the men I sent you? I urged Titus to go to you, and I sent our brother, whoever he was, with him. Titus did not exploit you, did he? Did we not act in the same spirit and follow the same course? What are you thinking, Corinthians? You've got to be kidding. The message of Jesus Christ, his forgiveness, his love, are free. He died on a cross that we might know them. And there is nothing that we can offer to pay for or to earn that. Nothing. And Christian ministry must seek to demonstrate that love in every appropriate way. And that includes the way the good news is actually spread. By people who do not do it for personal gain, but solely for the good of those they are serving. That was Paul's philosophy. And that is what made him such a good spiritual parent. He wasn't in it for himself. He didn't have sort of designer babies just to make himself feel fulfilled. Or as the latest sort of fashionable appendage, to have kids in a buggy or something like that. Parenting wasn't about his own fulfillment. It was about serving these people. A parent shouldn't need to boast. A parent doesn't expect to be paid. And finally, a parent never wants less than the best. That's verses 19 to 21. I think people in our society are very quick to question people's motives. So, for instance, if somebody says that a particular lifestyle is not the best way to live, they will jump on that and say that you hate all those who live that lifestyle. Or if you say that one religion is the only true way to God, they see that as evidence of a narrow-minded arrogance. Or if you suggest to a group of people that they should stop being selfish and learn to live together, they will dismiss this as the ignorant rants of an interfering busybody who should mind his own business. In short, our society is doing everything it can to silence those who have different ideas about what is best, whether they're good or bad. They dismiss them as full of hate, arrogance, or control freakery, or all three. This is because we in the West prize our autonomy more than anything else. We prize our independence. I don't want anyone else interfering in my life. And nor do you. And this, I think, is why Paul has such a bad press these days. Not because of what he says, though many people don't like that, but because he deigns to say anything at all about how we should live. That's the thing they don't like, the fact that he even opens his mouth. Probably wouldn't matter what he said. We just don't want people telling us we're on the wrong track, even if we are. But what parent is happy to let their children go down the plug hole? What parent wants their children to get in with the wrong crowd and perhaps waste their lives? Well, not Paul, that's for sure. He felt that he had the right as well as the responsibility as their apostle, church planter, and above all, spiritual parent to tell them some home truths. So as he says in verse 19, with this rather cutting way, have you been thinking all along that we've been defending ourselves? You can't have got that impression, have you? Well, of course I have. Of course I've been defending myself. Why? Because, as he continues, we've been speaking in the sight of God as those in Christ, and everything we do, dear friends, is for your strengthening. Of course we've been speaking like this. Your strengthening depends on it. He wants them to be built up in their faith. That's his aim. As their parent, he wants their very best. And he's realistic. He knows that when he comes back for his third visit, things will not be quite as he would hope. He'll be forced into having to say some strong things. He might find quarreling, jealousy, anger, faction, slander, gossip, arrogance, and disorder. What's more, he might find that there are cases of impurity, sexual sin, and debauchery still unrepented of. I say still, because these were all problems which were rampant in the church when he wrote 1 Corinthians. It's the same old problems. The divisions, the factions, the arguments, the quarreling, the sexual immorality. Things, many things that were totally inappropriate for Christians living together. Paul knew about it. He's persevered with them. He has kept on loving them as their spiritual parent, despite everything they said about him. But his love means that he must challenge it. He wants the best for them, so he's hardly going to indulge their behavior, is he? Now, he's got a fairly extensive list of things that are wrong, and they've been dealt with at various points throughout his letters to this church. It's certainly not an exhaustive list, but I just wonder, in principle, how we would have handled someone like Paul writing to us as a fellowship group or as an individual or as a church, writing to us and telling us to sort things out. How would you like that? If you get an email this week from your fellowship group leader saying, okay, Fred, I really think the time has come for you to stop doing this. My hunch is that we wouldn't like it very much at all. Because we don't like anyone pointing out our problems or telling us we're wrong. I, for one, don't. I can't bear it. But that's not a healthy approach for a Christian disciple, is it? Someone who should always be learning and following the Jesus who loved us with everything he's got. Who loved us to change us into the people we were created to be. Like the best parents, Jesus wants the best for us, and he died for it. And Paul loved the Corinthians, even if they insulted and rejected him. But he was still going to seek the best for them. So let me ask, do we allow people, will we allow people to challenge us, to rebuke us? Perhaps we could invite someone, a close friend. It doesn't need to be something in public. It doesn't need to be sort of discussed widely. It's just with one individual that we trust, whom we give permission to ask us difficult questions at the end of each month, perhaps. Like, have you been downloading porn from the internet this month? Have you been fiddling your expenses this month? Have you been short and bad-tempered with colleagues and family this month? Will you give someone the permission to ask that? Or will you strike out for independence come what may? I will live my own way, how I like. Is Jesus your Lord? Or are you? It's hard. Very hard. Paul's love and Jesus' love, for that matter, are examples of tough love. But they're love nevertheless, and they still seek the best. So I hope as we finish, none of us are in any doubts whatsoever about Paul's motives and sincere concern. But I also hope that no one has any illusions about how tough ministry can actually be. Like parenting. Yeah, there's probably nothing more miraculous in life than being a parent. It's a privilege and a source of wonder, but it's also a huge burden and a responsibility. Well, there is something, actually. Something more miraculous and yet as burdensome. And it's something that every Christian can be involved in and should be involved in, whether they're biological parents or not. And that is Christian ministry and love. Knowing the gospel and telling the gospel, bringing people up in the gospel, helping them to understand. It doesn't have to be done from the front. It can be done quietly with a friend. But have no illusions about it. Whether it's something you want to do full-time paid or as part of your daily walk, have no illusions about it. It's tough and costly. But have no doubts either. It's glorious and miraculous. Because you see, it is again about offering the free gift of God's love and grace again and again and again. And I guess that is why Paul was able to keep going despite all the disappointments and the insults that he received from this troubling church that he loved so much. Let's pray. Father, thank you for those who first brought us the good news. For those individuals who loved us and share their lives with us, that we might come to know you. As they follow Paul, and as Paul followed Christ, we pray that we might love others in the way that we have been loved. In Jesus' precious name, amen.